둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hi, it's Flo.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here for checking out the series. I do hope you hit that subscribe button. If you're not already, you're going to get new interviews like this one sent to you every single week. Of course, you can grab us at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. We've had some great guests drop by lately. In fact, I was just talking with Famke Janssen. Of course, you know her from James Bond and the X-Men. She's back in a new series on Netflix called Amsterdam Empire. Kaiser Chiefs, Teenage Fan Club were just here, Moby. Michaela J. Rodriguez and Ron Funches dropped in to talk about the latest season of Loot on Apple TV+. We spoke with Broken Social Scene, Speedy Ortiz, Mary Chapin Carpenter, Marty Stewart, Ian Astbury of The Cult. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, I am so excited. One of the all-time greats, one of my all-time favorites, Florence Welch of Florence and the Machine. They're back with an album called Everybody Scream. It released on Halloween, which is sort of great and appropriate. Florence and I are going to talk about how it really is her gothiest record yet. It's also, as she says, a sister to the last album, Dance Fever. She'll open up about insecurity, imperfection, how a near-death experience reshaped her connection to witchcraft and creativity. She's going to discuss recording raw, unpolished takes with Aaron Dessner, some lyrical callbacks to Daffodil and Cassandra, and how the record explores the line between prophecy and catastrophe. We'll dive into her striking visuals with Autumn de Wilde, the Western influence on the artwork, and finding some peace after all the chaos as well. I'm so excited to do this. I've been waiting years for this one. So let's jump into it and talk Everybody Scream. It's Kyle Meredith with Florence Welch of Florence and the Machine.
Hi, Kyle. Sorry, I'm so sick of seeing my fucking face. So I'm just like not...
completely understand.
No, totally camera. Get
it. I was laughing with Shirley Manson the other day because we've been doing interviews for like 12, 13 years. And I think we've done like 12 or 13 interviews. And every time she's like, I can't do the camera. I'm so sorry. I'm like, it's fine. It's
oh my God, Shirley icon. I love her. And I feel exactly the same fucking mm-hmm. way. And it's never been worse. I walked into a radio interview the other day and there were five cameras. I was like, this is radio. Mm-hmm. What the fuck is going on?
Everybody's got a camera. Everybody's got the phone. Whatever.
It was five cameras and two phones. I ducked. It was crazy. I was like crawling on the floor.
It's really a pleasure, seriously, to get to talk to you today, and especially about this new album with Everybody Scream. Holy cow! Because I've been a fan since Lungs and everything, and every album is great, but you are just hitting everything that I love about music on this record. So just the congratulations there.
Oh, that's so kind of you. Thank you so much. Like, so much of this record is almost about the insecurity of making records. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like Did I get it right? Was it even worth giving up like another chunk of my life for this? Like, it will be perfect. I'll be happy. You know, so much of it is wrestling with like what it takes from you versus what it gives. So it really just means so much to people say they like it.
Do you find it surprising that that's the insecurity this long into things? Like you've had a lot of records now, you know the process, but still this is what kind of bubbles to the top.
I only feel okay about it now that I accept that it's part of me. You know, I always expected to be able to make a record and just be like, yeah, it's perfect. And I have to accept that it just never happens. Like, it doesn't seem to be like a, it doesn't seem to be something like I allow myself. I don't know if that is that drive to then go and keep making things or, I don't know, childhood. Like, probably something to do with childhood. Like there is a sort of, but I think it made this one especially interesting because I was kind of acknowledging that about myself and acknowledging that fury and frustration. And I do think it made for an interesting record, kind of bringing that some of that energy into it.
Well, even in the music, I was trying to think like why does this sound different than not just your records, but a lot of records that I hear, and it's because of those, like you allowed some imperfections to stick around,
Yes.
like at the
Yes.
guitar of one of the greats, like you can hear like the tempo just shit, like but that's what made classics classics, right? That's Mary Clayton's Scream and Gimme Shelter, all of those moments.
Yeah, it was almost like it was accepting things being raw and ugly and imperfect in places. There was actually so much discussion over one of the greats and the tempo or its lack of, and the tuning. There were periods where me and Bowen tried to put it in time with itself and it just lost everything. There were periods where we tried to, like, I took it to some, before I met Aaron, I took it to some producers who were like, this guitar sound is terrible. Like, it's like, but I was like, it's not, it's perfect, it's
It's
amazing.
perfect.
Like, Aaron completely got it, but there is a discordance and almost like an ugliness to it that if you are a producer who's into like good sounds, do you know what I mean? Like a good sounding thing, you will be like perturbed by it. But it is in that, it is its brilliance. And so I actually didn't end up like working with one producer because he was sort of like wanted to replay it. I was like, no, I'm sorry, that's not happening, you know?
We've gotten so far away. It was easy for me to recall Nirvana when I first heard that guitar sound, just that dirty raw sound within a guitar. And it's just become so easy to, oh, it's not perfect. I can go back. Nobody's recording on tape anymore. We don't have to worry about that. You could,
Well, they're going back to tape now.
I would love that.
No, they are. They are. I think tape is coming back. It's, yeah, I think like me and Bowen did always mean to re-record it, honestly. It was done in one take. We didn't know what we were doing. I was singing it for the first time. He was playing it for the first time. And the whole thing is like, we're about to fall off a cliff, or is the song, are we going to get to the end of the song? It's just that feeling like it speeds up, slows down. We do not know where we're going. Like, we were keeping the most insane eye contact. Like, we both looked deranged as we were making it because we didn't know if we'd make it to the end of the song. And we did. And the idea was that we would get it perfect, do it tons and tons of times, and like re-record it. And actually, as you said, that take, I could never get that vocal take back. I could never, because I didn't really know where it was going or what it was doing, you know?
And that's the beauty, right? That's what actors, right? Don't know where the next line is. Know it, but don't know it.
That's it. So we just kept it, and then actually getting it over the line was so hard. It was so hard because to play to it, honestly, you couldn't put it on. You know, all of the things you usually do, like you couldn't put it on a click track. That was out of the question. You couldn't tune, you had to tune things to it rather than tune it. You know, like it was one burst of absolute like genius in the moment and then like painstaking 2 years of work.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Florence Welch. And of course, what you're talking about in that song and the way that goes into You Can Have It All, and just thinking about what you're actually talking about with, what you're talking about on. But like, even like I was thinking about the song Daffodil, and like, does this song and that song, do you find that they're sort of talking with each other in that same way?
That's a really good spot, actually, because I think I really was like, I felt like Daffodil. Sometimes you write a song on one record that kind of opens you up to the next one. And I feel like Daffodil was almost like a precursor of things to come on this record. I feel like I kind of discovered something I was really interested in sound wise. And it kind of, I do feel like that sense of this floral imagery mixed with extreme brutality of sound was something that I was exploring on this one as well. And Daffodil actually gets a shout out in Perfume and Milk. So yeah, it is, that is a really good spot because I do think of that song as connected to this album in some way.
And there was another one, like in Kraken, because Do You See Me Now? And I'm like, oh, that's there in Cassandra.
Oh yes. I mean, I think of them as sister records, honestly, because this record was formed by what happened touring the last record, and it feels like the last record was this record of like prophecy, and then this record is this record of catastrophe. You know, it's just like living with the kind of prophetic visions of the last record and the results of that. And so I do feel like they are connected in some way, and I feel like Dance Fever was a record that was kind of split in two by the pandemic. And I think it was really important for me to be able to pull this one together in one place, you know? So much of Dance Fever was had to be done remotely. And this one, I was like, no, I am going to Aaron's studio for a month. I'm pulling all this together. Like, I really needed to feel the album and myself kind of be pulled together, you know, and become whole.
To be whole. Like, I'm just thinking about that line, like, do you see me now? It's such an easy line, and it's so powerful at the same time.
So it's interesting because in Cassandra there's a flip. So in Cassandra it was Dance Fever's a weird like chronological album because it's almost like a, you know, I started recording it in New York and then I had to go home at the beginning of the pandemic, and Cassandra was sort of then Girls Against God and Cassandra were sort of written during the pandemic, and we had no idea when performance was going to come back or if it ever would come back, you know, if shows were gone forever, if this thing that I'd done my whole life, would it ever return? And so Cassandra, you're like, you're speaking to the power above you. Can you see me? I cannot see you. Everything I thought I knew has fallen out of view. So you're kind of speaking to that thing, that creative force, you know, being like, why have you forsaken me? You know, in that kind of way. And then Kraken is almost like you have become that huge thing, you know, like I think this record almost was like Dance Fever was like wrestling with potentially monsters outside of yourself, and this record is almost like becoming it, you know, like in it kind of and so Do You See Me Now? It's like I was sort of acknowledging how big it had become and how huge, and like it's almost like a groupie's revenge song cracking. Like the Do You See Me Now is in reference to like all of the, it was so male, the indie scene that I was in, and I was essentially like, you know, I was like, you know, the drunk girl that came to the gigs. So it was this thing of like, I guess I was seen, I was like least likely to, you know? And I'm like, oh, do you see me now? Like, did you have any, do you think about me? You know, that like drunk girl. 'Cause you're so, you're taken, like, no one takes you seriously. You're just there to be a fan, you know, like no one kind of thinks that you can be, could be anything more than someone to just idolize them. And then you become this kind of huge thing.
I mean, you become iconic.
Yes. Yeah. In a way, like it, yeah. And I think like, you know, I idolized them so much, you know, I idolized all those sort of like front men of my youth, and, did take so much like inspiration from them, and I think it added to a lot of the masculinity that you see in my performance. But I don't think they could have ever imagined that I would be the one to come out of that scene. You know, it's surprising I'm alive.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Florence Welch.
When I think about Iconic 2, it's like, because this is such a goth record, you know, and that shouldn't be surprising from an artist that made My Boy Builds Coffins right at the beginning, you know, but it's such a goth. And to me, when we're talking about this icon and iconography, like, it's almost like you're matching this image that so many has been projecting onto you for years, whether you meant it to or not. I think that's what it feels like to me anyway. Like hearing you talking about looking into, you know, witchcraft and spells and all that stuff. Like, I love that because it all feels right within this record, I guess.
Well, it was because like real spooky shit happened to me. It was like, it was beyond an aesthetic at this point. And so, you know, you play with the gothic and then, you know, there were strange predictive sentences in like the last album that's like ended up being sort of like strange, like sonic prophecies of things that would happen to me. And so it almost like I was looking for something beyond just like the aesthetic of witchiness, but to look deeper. And I think that allowed me to, you know, it based it in something very real. It wasn't like I was creating mythology to hide the truth. It was the truth. Does that make sense? It was like, this was like my way of coping with like a real thing that happened to me. So it feels like it's like I'm able to pull on all the imagery, all the like influences and the gothic imagery that I've always loved, but it's rooted in something incredibly real.
Selfishly, I really want you to ascend to actual witch and that can do spells. And I need that to be real, Florence. I need that.
Yeah, it was like, it was so, you know, it was so like physical and real. You know, I had like a near death experience on stage that was so real. And I think the imagination is a form of escape. I think when something happens to your body that you are not in control of, it is a way of being free. You know, if you can construct a mythology, or especially when I was looking into witchcraft and magic and medicine, I was looking into like a way of understanding what had happened to me, and also like a way of finding power in a situation where I felt completely powerless.
Well, I also think that you've sort of peeked behind the veil of human connection in a way that most people don't ever get to. Like when you're standing on a stage and you've got tens of thousands of people around you, you know, moving as one body and pushing all of that energy towards you, like that's a whole different level of like, so I do think you get to see something that the rest of people don't. And a lot of people in your position as well, you know, but just to be open to that, I mean.
Yeah, you do have to sort of open some kind of portal in yourself, which allows you to be completely in the moment. And then the gift that you give to everyone is that they are allowed to be there too. You know, it is a sort of, you do have to like almost, it's like almost like energy work or something. Like you have to make your energy so big and project like out from yourself that you can hold all those thousands of people together in that one moment with you. And that's kind of something about the album deals with that sense of hugeness and actually how difficult that is to fit into the confines of a normal life and the things that I also want, you know, like this sense that there's this crazy force or energy inside of me that's always like trying to get out, you know, even when I'm trying to do the normal things of life.
I love how it goes into that music and everything about it. And I really quickly, I also wanted to just, you know, mention like these collaborations that you do, seeing these videos that you do with Autumn de Wilde and just this world that you all have created.
My mom was like, it's so scary. That's like good.
But you know,
Good.
as a child of the 80s, teen of the 90s, of course, music videos was so important to me, and that and just what you could do, and the fact that you all have continued that,
I
across.
know, I know. Everyone, yeah, I know. Everyone's like, "Oh, you're still gonna make a bunch of mu expensive music videos." I'm like, "Yes, yes, we are."
Oh, thank goodness. Because
Because
it's
technically, you don't even have to now.
you don't
Technically,
you
people
don't have
wouldn't even make you. They would be like, "Do you have the content? Good. Do you have a Spotify canvas? We're good." That would be, you don't technically have to do it. But I think it's so important for me in terms of, I think especially with a record this personal, the world around it had to be rock solid. Like, and I don't know, I just think like I'm so visual, and it's sort of, I always find it adds a layer to the song that I, working with Autumn, she always adds, like, she takes stuff in and she always adds elements that I didn't even hear in the music, but are definitely there. There is witchcraft, but there's also this strange, like, Western feeling sometimes in some of the songs, like this outlaw energy. And so when there was the Backwoods Horseman, I was like, of course, there is this sort of like almost like this Wild West feeling to the music in places, like especially like Music by Men or Buckle, you feel this sort of like lonesome cowboy energy. So it was like there was witches, but there was also like this Backwoods Horseman, and it was like a medieval tavern, but it also looked like a kind of bordello, and the witches are in it, and like, so she hears things and sees things in the music that I know are there, but she brings them to life in a way I kind of didn't even realize sometimes.
Yeah, and just to elevate the song like that, and I think that goes for the artwork too. I mean, like I thought the artwork was striking. Then I w didn't I see you post a picture like the artwork is in reference to another piece of arts?
So the artwork was in reference to a picture from a still from the movie McCabe and Mrs. Miller, which was a Western. So it's like an old Western, and Julie
And there the
Christie's
Western is
just
again,
done.
yeah.
Yeah, so the Western element comes into it. We were also looking at Possession, I think, the film Possession, and yeah, like looking a lot at like at the Edwardian but 70s and then Western elements,
Again, the amount of levels and onion skin layers that we can just pick apart on these as fans, it just, you can hear a song and you can like the song and you can sing along to the song, but if you can take that, multi-dimensional, and it makes it so much more fun, I guess is what I'm saying. So I'm already having.
I mean, well, that's what albums are like for me. They become almost these like mini reference projects where, I read up so much about witchcraft and visited, the biggest occult library in London, and I got to kind of look at like all these strange like Victorian and Edwardian texts, and then I'm also Autumn sending me movies, I'm sending her movies, like they become these sort of like, yeah, like this way for me also to learn more about culture and to learn more about art. And every time I do a record, I feel like I like learn a little more about the world as well.
Well, I know I probably need to wrap this up too, but just, I cannot overcompliment it. I really don't think I can overcompliment how good this record is. And even the stuff I didn't get to hit on, I mean, lyrics, miracles are often inconvenient, I think is one of my favorite little puzzles that I keep working on lately. And just ending with, peace is coming.
I know. Well, in a record with so much like, in a record with so much like, yeah, like longing and aching and screaming, I wanted to end it on a song. Also, if like songs are coming true, let it be this one. Let it be peace for me and for us all. If songs are prophecies or manifestations, it felt very important to me to release a song into the world about just like, what is it? More like surrendering to something and more like resting than running. Peace is coming.
Well, I hope that's a manifestation for all of us.
Yeah, me too.
Congratulations on this one. Thank you for continuing to do what you do. Seriously, it has been such a pleasure getting to talk to you today about it.
Thank you so much, Kyle.
And my thanks to Florence, Everybody Screamed is out now. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week. Again, you can grab us Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of classics from the 70s, 80s, 90s. There's tons of brand new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows features some classics and favorites from Bob Dylan, Linda Ronstadt, Lucius, Blackalicious, U2, The Rolling Stones, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, New Pornographers, Ani DiFranco, Queen, Mitch Rowland, Nation of Language, Talking Heads, Elton John, Geese, Goose, Tears for Fears, Sonic Youth, Gorillaz, and my interviews with Simon Le Bon of Duran Duran, William Reed of the Jesus and Mary Chain, and legendary actor Willem Dafoe. That's what you're going to hear weeknights when you tune in starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. You can also find us at lpm.org/music. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. Please do like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Speak soon. Bye.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.